Every week I say, I know that you all have things going on in your life, burdens that you're bearing and things that you're dealing with, and yet, in spite of everything that you have, you've chosen to be here, and what an encouragement it is. And Reggie is a great example of that, of somebody who has something huge going on in his family and his life, and he chose to be here with us, and what an encouragement that is. And I know the Hutchings family is not the only one who is grieving. I know that there are many of you who are grieving and struggling and worried and angry and anxious and dealing with all kinds of things, juggling all kinds of things, and I think you're in the right place. And I'm so incredibly thankful that you're here, because your presence is an encouragement to me and it's an encouragement to everyone around you and even those who are participating online. I know that they would want you to know, especially your brothers and sisters who can't be with us because of one thing or another. They can't be here, but they're participating online. I know that they want you to know that they're here with us and that they love you, and we want them to know that they are loved by everyone here. I'm so thankful for the family of God. And that's exactly what we're talking about this quarter on Wednesday nights. We're talking about the difference, or what should be the difference, between this community, this nation, this kingdom. And when I say this community and this nation and this kingdom, I'm talking about God's people, this multi-ethnic, multinational, multilingual family that is global all over the world, and our capital city is the New Jerusalem. That's the us we're talking about. That's our us. That's our we, like we talked about last week, and how we need to be a stark contrast to what we see in the world. And what we see in the world, we've talked about it. We know it. We experience it every day, every week, every month, every year. You're out there in it. You see it. You see it when you turn on the TV. You see it when you scroll through social media. You see it in your own family. You see the world. You see the brokenness and the pain and the toxicity, the anger, the division, the divisiveness. We see that, don't we? And we're talking about how we need to be very careful not to let the world's divisions be our divisions. Not let the world's walls be our walls. Not let the world's lines be the lines we draw. And how we need to be united in spite of the division that we see in the world. But if we see all of that in the world, if we see the brokenness and we see the sin and we see the toxicity and we see all of that, then our natural inclination is, I want to fix it, right? I want to fix it. And some of us, we're natural fixers. And somebody tells us there's a problem and we say, hey, what are we going to do? We're gonna fix this. We got to change things. And I think that's a good inclination, right? I think it's wonderful that we want to be salt and light. We want to change things in the world. We want to make the world a better place. And I think that's good. But there's a big question, and that's how. How do we go about changing things? Because we have to be very careful that, just as we talked about last week, we can't allow the world's divisions to become our divisions. We also can't allow the world's solutions to be our solutions. We can't try to fix the world the way the world would go about fixing things. Let me ask you this question. Given the magnitude, we can apply this to anything. It doesn't have to be what we're specifically talking about. But just think about this. If you just heard this sentence anywhere, given the magnitude of our problems, maybe this is something a spouse is saying, or maybe this is something a boss is saying, or this is something a teacher is saying, or this is something, you could put this in any situation, any scenario. Given the magnitude of our problems, we need a leader who is blank. We need someone who is blank. Give me some words. What might someone fill in that blank with? What I heard it. Strong. There's a good word. Strong. Yeah, we need a leader who is strong, right? What else? I'm sorry? Committed. Committed. Yes, absolutely. Am I hearing? I apologize. Strong. Committed. What else? Brave. Good word. Okay, godly. We might say that. Yeah, I hope we would say that, right? What else? Honest. Ooh, that's a good word. Yeah. I'm sorry? Visionary, right? Somebody who has vision. Yeah. What else? Wise. Ooh, wise. Yes. Sorry? Principled, yes, that's good. Bold, yeah, bold, yeah. Decisive, yeah. Educated, yes, good words. Okay, and so, some of those, you know, we would want to have some nuance with, and others we think we kind of have an understanding of what that means or what something else means. What I didn't hear, and what I can't imagine anyone saying, given the magnitude of our problems, we need a leader who is humble. Given the magnitude of our problems, we need a leader who is despised, rejected, weak, poor, somebody who's been kicked around. Given the magnitude of our problems, we need a leader who is crucified. I mean, nobody's ever said anything like that, right? Nobody has ever looked at their problems and said, okay, the only person who could possibly solve this is somebody who has been despised and spit on and whipped and been treated like he's trash and then nailed to a cross and died. That's who can solve these problems. Nobody thinks like that. In fact, if somebody proposed that as a solution, if somebody came to you and said, okay, I know you got a lot of problems in your life. I know you got a lot of burdens that you're bearing. I know that you're dealing with a lot of stuff. I know that your world seems so broken and so hopeless and so out of control. So here, I want to propose to you a crucified king. A king who has been bloodied and spit upon, who no one respected, no one looked up to, no one loved, no one honored. And they nailed him to a cross. Even the people that did follow him abandoned him. That's the person that you need to give all of your loyalty and all of your allegiance and all of your trust to. Because in spite of the way that that seems, in spite of how weak that seems, in spite of how foolish that seems, he conquered everything. He won. Victory already belongs to him. And nobody else believes it yet. But if you will believe that, if you will hook your wagon to him, if you will give your allegiance and loyalty to a crucified Messiah that nobody can see yet, that he's still hidden right now, then you will win too. And none of these things that you're dealing with will overcome you. You will overcome them. You will be more than conquerors. You will be victorious if you trust this despised, rejected, humble, crucified king. That sounds ridiculous even now, doesn't it? Can you imagine how much more ridiculous it sounded in the first century world? I mean, at least now we wear crosses. We pay some lip service to crosses, and people see crosses, and they think, okay, that's not such a bad thing. But in the first century, that was the most shameful thing you could possibly imagine. It's how Rome not only executed the rebels, but how they humiliated them before they died. For days, they would hang on the cross. You say, you see, this weak, worthless piece of trash, he thought he could stand up against Rome? And they would line the streets with these crucified men to say, you see, this is what happens when you stand up against the power and might and glory and majesty of Rome. We crucify worthless, weak pieces of trash like this. And so this group of Christians who say, actually, our king is one of those people, one of those guys, one of those crucified ones, who through the cross conquered death. See, it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? And we need to get back to the point where we can embrace the foolishness of the cross. Because if we don't understand how foolish it sounds, we won't embrace the word of the cross. So look at 1 Corinthians, that's what we're studying this quarter. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18. Paul says this. He says, for the word of the cross, this is where we left off last week, for the word of the cross, the message of the cross, is folly. What does folly mean? Foolish, right? Silly. It's ridiculous. It's nonsensical. The word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us, who are being saved, it is the power of God. See? I mean, the world looks at the cross and says, to put your trust in anyone who is cursed to hang on a tree like that, that's ridiculous. You Christians are the weakest bunch of foolish, silly, ridiculous people I've ever heard of in my life. Who trusts a crucified king? How is a crucified king going to solve any problems? Really? You think our answers are going to be found in a crucified king? And we say, yes, yes, they are. Because that is power. That's what real power looks like. It's the power of God unto salvation. The world looks at it, those who are perishing look at it and say, it's foolish, it's ridiculous, it's nonsensical, it's laughable. And we look at it and we say, that's the power of God. Because through the cross, in the cross, Jesus conquered everything. But see, the Corinthian church, they were still struggling to embrace this idea. They were struggling to embrace the word of the cross. I mean, they met together as Christians, they had been baptized, all of those things, but they were struggling to embrace this message. Because not only, like we talked about last week, were they divided, but they were also continuing to glamorize and idolize and look up to people who had worldly power and worldly strength and worldly wisdom. And Paul says, as long as you're doing that, as long as you're idolizing people and their power and their wisdom and their strength and their money and their nobility and their rhetoric and their ability to speak really well, as long as you prioritize those things, you haven't gotten it yet. You haven't embraced the foolishness of the cross, the word of the cross, and realize that the cross is the power of God unto salvation. Verse 19, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where's the one who's wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? God has made foolish the wisdom of the world. He's exposed the wisdom of the world as being actually foolishness. What the world thinks of as wise, God says, actually, that's foolish. And he's used the cross to do that. For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God, through wisdom it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. Through the foolishness, or what seems like foolishness, what seems like the foolishness of the cross, we are exposing the foolishness of the world. That what they think of as wise is actually foolish. See, it's what we've said a million times, isn't it? That the kingdom of God is an upside-down kingdom, or better yet, it's a right-side-up kingdom. The whole world is upside down. And what the world thinks of as strong is actually weakness. What the world thinks of as wise is actually foolish. What the world thinks of as rich is actually poverty. And in the cross, all things are turned right side up. But a lot of the Corinthians hadn't accepted that yet. And a lot of us haven't accepted that. Oh, I mean, we've gotten baptized and we say, oh, yeah, yeah, I want to go to heaven and I want to be saved and I want my sins washed away. But we haven't embraced the power of God unto salvation, the wisdom of God and how he thwarts the wisdom of the world. See, according to the world, God's idea of wisdom and power is foolish, right? Again, nobody in the first century looked at a cross and said, I bet that's how God's going to save the world. Nobody said that. Nobody looked at the cross and said, I bet that's how God's going to accomplish anything. You don't think that's how problems are going to get solved is through the death of a king. How's that going to solve anything? But according to God, the wisdom of the world is actually foolish. They look at God's wisdom and say, that's foolish. They look at God's strength and say, that's weak. But God looks at them and says, no, no, no. What you think of as wise is foolish. What you think of as strong is actually weak. So the question is, who are you going to believe? Are you going to accept God's wisdom and God's strength and God's power, or the world's wisdom and the world's strength and the world's power. He says this, verse 22, for Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, which is, he says, a stumbling block to the Jews and folly to the Gentiles, but to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, number one, the power of God, and number two, the wisdom of God, for the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. So he says, Jews look for some powerful sign from God, and Greeks are looking for some rhetoric and some wisdom and some philosopher. And Paul says, but here's what we preach, Jesus, a crucified king, a crucified Messiah, which is actually in reality the power of God and the wisdom of God. So the question is, whose idea of wisdom and power do you embrace? And that is what Paul is trying to get them to ask themselves. Whose idea of wisdom and power do you embrace? If we're really honest, we still, even after 2,000 years, maybe you grew up in a Christian home, maybe you grew up reading the Bible, you grew up around crosses, but you never realized, the cross isn't just the way that God saved me, past tense, but this is the way and the life to which he is calling me, present tense, to take up my cross and follow him. For me to take on the form of a servant, for me to take on this humility, and to stop putting stock in what the world calls wisdom, because it's not wise, and what the world calls power, because it's not powerful, and what the world calls strength, because it's not strong, and what the world calls riches, because it's actually poverty, and to embrace the way of the cross, the way of selflessness, the way of sacrifice, the way of humility, the way of doing the will of God, even when it costs us respect and honor and power and money, because we don't value the sorts of things that the world values. It's hard, isn't it, for our priorities and our mindset and our worldview to get so turned upside down, or rather, again, turned right side up. Through the cross, God is exposing the world for what it is. But again, we still, when we have a problem, we look for somebody who has, quote unquote, wisdom. We look for somebody who has power and strength and wealth. And we're still measuring things the way the world does. And that's exactly what the Corinthian church was doing. They were rallying around leaders. They were rallying around people who had what they looked at as wisdom and strength and power and nobility. And Paul says, that's not what strength looks like. That's not what wisdom looks like. That's not what power looks like. What does it look like, Paul? It looks like Jesus hanging on a cross. That's what it looks like. Verse 26, for consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise according to the worldly standards. Not many of you were powerful. Not many of you were of noble birth. Think about yourselves. You weren't these things that you idolize in these leaders. So they're rallying around these different teachers and these different leaders because they said, well, this person, I mean, he speaks really well. He has so much charisma. He's powerful. He's bold. He's smart. He's all of these things. And so this is what, surely, if somebody's going to solve our problems or lead us out of this mess, it's going to be somebody like that. And Paul says, nonsense. Think about yourselves. You weren't wise by the world's standards. You weren't noble, of noble birth. You weren't powerful. Again, it's very easy to think, well, of course God is going to use the rich and the powerful and the strong and the wise and the charismatic, the people that are really good at talking with great rhetoric. He's going to use those kind of people to solve our problems. But Paul says that's not how God operates. And those that embrace the way and the word of the cross should know that. He says, verse 27, but God chose, this is how God operates. God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God. See, the world through all of its wisdom and all of its strength and all of its power and all of its violence, everything the sword could do, everything the cross could do, all of its power and strength and might, the world threw it all at Jesus, and Jesus shrugged it off and walked out of the grave alive. God shamed the wisdom of the world. He shamed the power of the world because those things are not actually wise. They're not actually strong. What does have wisdom and strength and power is the cross of Jesus Christ. And so he's saying, this is not how God operates. God doesn't need, listen, God does not need people with worldly wisdom in order for God to be victorious. God does not need people with worldly power for God to be victorious. God does not need people with worldly strength in order for God to be victorious. God does not need people with money for God to be victorious. That's not how God typically operates. Now, that's not to say that the rich and the wise and the powerful and strong aren't welcome to come to Jesus if they'll humble themselves and come to him. They can. Anyone can. It's open to everyone. But it really kind of bugs me when I hear Christians say, oh, this billionaire over there, wouldn't that be amazing if they came to Jesus? Can you imagine what God could do with all of their wealth and resources? I mean, I would love for them to come to Jesus. I'd love for anybody to come to Jesus. But we should be just as excited about a homeless person who comes to Jesus as we are a billionaire who comes to Jesus. Because God could probably use the homeless man and his testimony a lot more than he can use the billionaire. And we're still thinking like the world when we think, but we need money and we need power and we need strength and we need people that are great talkers and we need people that are great philosophers and we need people that can use rhetoric. And Paul says, that's not how God operates. The way God has been victorious is through the cross, Jesus Christ and him crucified. And Paul says, that's all I know. That's all I preach, Jesus Christ and him crucified. And the way that the Corinthians were rallying around leaders who were great talkers and were very strong and were of noble birth and had a little bit of money to their name, Paul says, you still don't get it. You still don't get it. You're still trying to solve your problems the way the world solves their problems. Look at verse 30. He says, and because of him, you are in Christ Jesus, who became to us, what did Jesus become to us? Wisdom from God, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption, so that as it is written, let the one who boasts boast in whom, church? The Lord. We love to be proud, don't we? I'm going to step on my toes and your toes and all of our toes. We love to be proud. We love to be proud of where we're from. I tease, but maybe it's not really a joke, but I tease that no state, I wonder, are there other states that have waffle irons in the shape of their states? I don't know. I don't know that they do. But we sure do, don't we? I mean, we love the shape of Texas. I mean, we love everything about Texas. And we say everything's bigger in Texas. It is the second biggest state. It's not even the biggest, but we still claim that everything is bigger. I don't know. But we're very proud of being Texans. We're very proud of being Americans. Very proud of where we come from or what we have or what we've done. I don't find that in the New Testament. I don't find any excuse for it. What I find is this. Let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord, in the crucified Messiah. You want to brag about something? Here's what you can brag about. I'm a sinner. I'm a hopeless, I'm not going to say worthless, I'm not worthless, but hopeless and dead sinner without Jesus. And not because of me, but because of him, he rescued me and saved me and gave me a name, raised me up and redeemed me and sanctified me and made me righteous in God's sight. Not because of me, but because of him. You want to brag about something? Brag about what he's done. You want to brag about something? Brag about what he is and who he is and what he has done. And again, if you're doing it right, then the world will say, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. What kind of weak people, what kind of, pardon the word, stupid people, what kind of foolish people would only boast in a crucified king? That's of course, what the world thinks. And for Paul to say, that's my only boast, nothing else. Not where I'm from, not what I've done, not what I've accomplished, not what I have, nothing, none of that. I could boast about all kinds of things. I'm a Jew of Jews, I'm this, I'm that. I was a Pharisee, I accomplished things, but none of that, all of that's trash, it's garbage, it's refuse. I don't want any of it. I'm not going to boast in any of that. If I'm going to boast in anything, it's our crucified king. And the world says, that's dumb, it's ridiculous, it's foolish. He says, that's because you don't understand that the cross is the wisdom of God. The cross is the power of God. And if you think it's foolish to put your trust in a crucified king, then you don't understand wisdom and you don't understand strength. Look at the first verse of the next chapter. And I, when I came to you, brothers, did not come proclaiming to you the testimony of God with lofty speech or wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Paul says, I've embraced this in my own ministry. When I came to you, I didn't come to you trying to impress you with how great of a speaker I am. I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And if you say, well, I'm not impressed with Jesus Christ and him crucified, give me something more. Give me a show to watch, Paul. Give me something cool or fun or funny or interesting to listen to. He says, I don't have any of that. I don't have any of that. I got one thing. Jesus. And him crucified. He's the Christ, the crucified king. He's that cross of Jesus. It is the wisdom and the power of God. He says, verse 3, and I was with you in weakness and in fear and much trembling, and my speech and my message were not in plausible words of wisdom, but in demonstrations of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might not rest in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. He says, when I was there, I wasn't an impressive speaker. And so people that were criticizing Paul say, I'm not impressed with Paul. He's not a great preacher. He doesn't know how to string together words. He's not a practiced orator like so many other speakers. And I'm just not impressed with Paul. He says, that's okay. I never wanted you to be impressed with me. I didn't show up to impress you with how great of a speaker I am. In fact, I wanted you to see that dude is weak. I wanted you to see my weakness. I wanted you to see my fear. I wanted you to see my trembling. I wanted you to think that guy is a stuttering, bumbling fool. And Paul would say, absolutely I am. And Jesus saved me. He rescued me. He rescued me not in spite of his cross, but through his cross, because his cross is God's wisdom. His cross is God's power. And so I showed you the work and the power of Jesus and the work and the power of the Spirit because I wanted your trust to be in him and not in me. And do you see what Paul is undermining here? He's undermining those who are putting their trust in powerful speakers, in powerful teachers, in powerful leaders. Whether it's because, well, this guy is of noble birth. I mean, don't you know where he comes from, Paul? Don't you know his pedigree? This guy has a lot of money. Don't you know? I mean, he knows how to handle money. He's very good with all of his power and his resources. This guy is incredibly strong. This guy is a great speaker. Paul says, none of that matters. What matters is Jesus Christ and him crucified. That's the wisdom and the power of God. Verse 6, yet among the mature, we do impart wisdom, although it is not a wisdom of this age or of the rulers of this age. It's not like the academics sort of wisdom. It's not like the political leaders sort of power, because these are doomed to pass away. But we impart a secret and hidden wisdom of God, which God decreed before the ages for our glory. None of the rulers of this age understood this. For if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. People at the top, the rulers of this age, the wise of this age, they don't get the message of the cross. And that, again, it seems like foolishness in the first century or in the 21st century. In fact, no one, he'll go on to say, no one understands it naturally. You would not have come up with this idea. None of us would. None of us would say, well, that makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense that God would use the cross in order to save humanity. Nobody would come up with that idea. And Paul says, that's how you know it's from God. That's how you know it's from God. But, verse 9, but as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man imagined, what God has prepared for those who love him. Here, Paul is not using these words to talk about heaven. That's how we usually talk about it, isn't it? Oh, I can't wait to see what God has prepared for me. He said, no, actually, God prepared something like the cross, not only for Jesus, but for you. And you wouldn't have guessed that is the way that God is going to accomplish things, is through the cross, is through a cruciform solution. These things God has revealed to us through the Spirit, for the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. For who knows a person's thoughts? This is verse 11. For who knows a person's thoughts except the spirit of that person which is in man or in him? So also no one comprehends the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we might understand the things freely given us by God. This message of the cross, human beings would have never thought of it. The only way you could ever realize, oh, that really is wisdom, that really is power, is through the Spirit of God. Paul says, this message that I'm preaching to you, I didn't come up with it. He wouldn't have come up with it. No one would have come up with it. You wouldn't have thought of this. I wouldn't have thought of this. You wouldn't embrace this if not for the Spirit of God. He says, verse 13, and we impart this in words not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual truths to those who are spiritual. The natural person does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him, and he is not able to understand them because they are spiritually discerned. Not only are these words, this message of the cross, not only is it from God, it takes a heart inclined towards God to even understand them or embrace them. The natural person rejects this. The natural person rejects. God can't win through humility. God can't win through what looks like weakness. God can't win through what looks like foolishness. How is God going to accomplish anything through a cross? How is God going to accomplish anything through his people being persecuted? How is God going to accomplish anything through his people turning the other cheek? How is God going to accomplish anything if his people go the extra mile? How is God going to accomplish anything if his people love their enemies? And Paul says, this message is from God. I didn't think this up. None of us did. It's from him. This is God's power. This is God's wisdom. Verse 15, the spiritual person judges all things, but is himself to be judged by no one. For who has understood the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. I think the we there is probably the apostles saying, we have the mind of Christ. We're telling you what the mind of Christ is. And when you argue with this and say, yeah, the cross, okay, whatever. But what I really want is somebody with power and strength and money and nobility. You're really arguing with Jesus. In 2020, late 2020, I'll just say a leading political figure said, we've turned the other cheek. And he said, I understand sort of the biblical reference. I understand the mentality, but it, turning the other cheek, has gotten us nothing, okay? It's gotten us nothing. And I get it. That somebody would say, turning the other cheek gets us nothing. That's true. If what you're trying to get is respect, or what you're trying to get is power, or what you're trying to get is anything that the world values, but turning the other cheek does get you something. It gets you the favor of God because it's obedience. It's trust. That's what loyalty looks like. It looks like not vindicating yourself. It looks like non-retaliation. It looks like loving your enemies. And this is the way that we address the brokenness in the world. And I know we think, oh, no. We need something more. And Paul said, if you think we need something more, you still don't understand the cross. We could say it this way. The cross exposes the foolishness of the world's wisdom and the weakness of the world's strength. See, because when we keep thinking, oh, but that's what we really need, we don't understand that the cross has exposed them for what they are. That what the world calls wisdom is really foolishness. And what the world calls strength is really weakness. And so those who continue to put stock in them, in the world's wisdom and the world's strength, have not yet embraced the word of the cross. And that's what Paul is trying to get the Corinthians to understand. You're Christians. And so the idea that you're still thinking that worldly wisdom and worldly power and worldly strength and worldly nobility and worldly money, that this is really what we need to change the world or to fix things, or this is what you're rallying around, or this is what you're giving your loyalty and allegiance to, it exposes that you still don't understand that the cross of Jesus Christ is the wisdom and the power of God. Let's pray. Father, I confess that I'm speaking to myself tonight, that so often I have not embraced the word of the cross. And I've wanted to be respected, and I've wanted to be impressive, and I wanted to be admired, and I wanted to follow other people who seemed impressive or admirable. Father, help me to realize, help us to realize that the cross has exposed the wisdom of the world and the strength of the world as being powerless and foolish. And Father, help us to give our loyalty and allegiance to King Jesus, to be willing to be thought of as foolish and silly and ridiculous and weak because we follow a crucified Messiah, because we know, Father, that the cross is your power and your wisdom to save. Father, help us to put all of our loyalty and all of our allegiance and all of our trust in Jesus Christ and Him crucified. We pray this in His name. Amen.